Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. It's hour two, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. Usually Joy with Blazing Five. I've got 14, 15 games to choose from, and I pick five. This week, I've only got six games to choose from, and I'm going to pick five. So the chance of me acing all these is very low because I have... not much to choose from. I'm just going to bet all the games except the Chiefs-Steelers, which I don't like big lines. I stay away from big line games. You ready for this?
Let's do it. I'm excited. Wild card weekend.
All right. So a lot of things. You know, these games are usually closer than we think. So let's do it. Our Blazing Five.
That's a hot one.
Let's blaze it up.
Fire it up.
It's Collins Blazing Five. Raiders at Bengals.
I'm going to take the Bengals -5.5. Matchup of the team with the most penalty yards in the league, the Raiders, and a matchup of the team with the fewest penalty yards in the league, the Bengals. I also worry that the Raiders defense was on the field for 90 snaps, and then they lose a day with travel. And Joe Burrow this year, you can look at the numbers, has been absolutely unbelievable. Completion percentage number one in the league. Passer rating number two in the league. The Raiders are the first team in NFL history that end a season with four straight wins of 4 points or fewer. I kind of feel like the gig is up. They've also only scored 17 offensive touchdowns over the last 10 weeks. That's the fewest among all playoff teams. I think a worn down defense gets exposed in the second half. Bengals win and cover 32-26.
Patriots at Bills.
Well, I'm going to take the points here with New England. Belichick gets Josh Allen for a third time. New England has 24 rushing touchdowns, second most in the league. It's 0 degrees. I don't think there's going to be a ton of points, and I like four with New England. The Bills, by the way, are 0-5 in games decided by one possession. I told you, they're Mike Tyson. They'll knock you out early or lose close. And Josh Allen against the Patriots has not been very good. 57% completion percentage. In fact, he's only completed 63 on the year. That's the second lowest among all playoff quarterbacks, and that includes good weather games. I think it's ugly. I think it's low scoring. It's going to be low scoring, so I'm taking the four. I'll take the Bills to win in a late field goal, but this is my strongest play of the weekend. I like New England plus the points. 28-27 Bills win.
Eagles at Buccaneers.
This is my second strongest play of the weekend. I like the Eagles +8.5. They don't make mistakes, and Brady does. Philadelphia right now, I think yards, this is a fascinating one. If you look at the Eagles offense, they average almost 3.5 yards a carry before contact. That leads the league. That means there's holes open. They open things up, and they have 16 giveaways this year. Third fewest among playoff teams, whereas Brady has 15 giveaways this year. That's the most for him in 12 years. Tampa Bay is still banged up, does not have a consistent run game. The weather could be windy. That hurts the more vertical passing team. I think Tampa wins here, but 8.5 against the team that consistently gets over 10 yards a carry. I think it's close. Tampa Bay 27, Philadelphia 24.
49ers at Cowboys.
Went back and forth. I got to go with my initial instinct. I'm taking San Francisco and the points and the upset win. Listen, the road teams won 10 of 14 wild card games over the last 3 years. It's the majority. And the offense for San Francisco leads the NFL. Huge stat, yards per play, 6.1. 49ers offense, hottest it's been all year. 3 of the last 4 games, 150 yards rushing plus. And oh, by the way, all you Jimmy Garoppolo haters, it's insane. Here are the numbers post-Thanksgiving for Jimmy Garoppolo. Since week 9, second in the league in completion percentage, first in passing yards per attempt, first in big passing plays, Since Thanksgiving, he's a top five clutch quarterback in the league, and the Cowboys are 1-5 when they're held under 100 rushing yards, and it's hard to get to 100 against the Niners defense. I like the Niners to win 28-27. Take the points.
Cardinals at Rams.
This is my weakest bet of the weekend. I'll take the Rams -4. A couple of things worry me. Arizona's defense has not been good. 6 yards a play surrendered in their last 5 games. And the Rams, 10 of their 12 wins by 7 or more. Like Buffalo, they get it going. They get a lead. They rarely lose. Kyler Murray is 1-4 over his last 5 games, and he has struggled against this Rams personnel regardless of who is the coordinator. Not only 1 win in his last 6, but 9 giveaways and a passer rating barely above 80. In this division, the Niners give the Rams fits, and the Rams tend to control Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. It's my weakest play of the week, but I like the Rams to win and cover 31-26. There you go. All of our odds provided by Fox Bet Sportsbook. I like 3 dogs and 2 favorites. And I will say this. I really worry about the Raiders' defense. Wildly energized atmosphere, almost 90 snaps, and then you lose a day traveling. I think you won't see it early. They'll play with a ton of energy early, but I would not be surprised if in the second half you just get a fairly uninspired Raider defense, especially if the Bengals come in and they can get the offense rolling, pick up first downs, keep the Raider defense on the field. That is a lot to ask. And the Raiders also have done something that they keep winning all these close games. It doesn't work like that. It just doesn't. You don't. It's a coin. It's like fumbles. Like sometimes you'll have years you fumble and you recover all of them, and then there are years you fumble and you don't recover any of them. It's a random stat. You're not going to keep winning all these close games. Seattle did 2 years ago. They like won every close game. This year they lost the close games. So let's bring in Eric Mangini. All right, the obvious question is, Bills Patriots played 2 games split. Now you face a team for the third time. Now I would think advantage Belichick. Belichick gets a third look at Josh Allen, who is talented but a little wild. You tell me, you face teams when you were with New England a third time. Advantage Bill?
Well, Colin, I faced Bill a third time when I was the head coach of the Jets. And we had the same situation. We split during the course of the season. They beat us at our place. We beat them at their place. And then we had to go a little different. We had to go to New England to play them. I'd say the other difference that situation is they actually changed out the field after we beat them during the regular season and went to turf. So that was a little different environment. But I'd say the main thing that he did, and he did really well, is we had done a lot to confuse Tom, to attack their rules, and they came out with a high-tempo, no-huddle offense that didn't allow us to do any of those things early in the game. Then if they hit a play, they came back and they hit exactly the same play again. So that first drive, they did actually create an advantage and ended up scoring. So there's going to be something like that that the Bills are going to have to deal with early in the game, and how well they deal with it is going to go a long way in terms of how well, you know, whether or not they're able to win.
So you have, in the last 4 years, there's been one kind of blowout in the wild card round. That was the Saints over the Bears last year. So underdogs do well. We're going to have upsets. We may have an overtime game. I think Philadelphia keeps it close with Tampa. What is your underdog to keep an eye on?
Look, you and I always disagree on Big Ben, and I like Big Ben, and I love Big Ben in this situation where he's literally fighting to play another week. And when you look at the last time they played, the game couldn't start any worse than it did, where Kansas City goes down and scores, and then Pittsburgh tries a flea flicker, it gets intercepted, and the whole thing goes south pretty early on. I like the Steelers. I like I like the Steelers. I like where they are. I like their attitude. I like the fact that they're playing with no pressure. And, you know, I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Mike Tomlin is one of the great underdog coaches in league. He is. You know, the knock on him is like, yeah, he's all about motivation. Well, that's really good when you're an underdog, because his teams come in, their offense is so unwatchable, but yet I've seen this happen probably five times this year. You think they're overwhelmed, and they play great, and they just have a great 3 hours. So,
yep. And you underestimate your opponent, which it's easy to do in this situation. Colts did it last week. Rams did it against us in New England in the Super Bowl. It happens. And it's it's a terrible way to end your season.
What concerns you about the Dallas Cowboys' favor to win at home this weekend?
A lot concerns me. I've watched them a ton throughout the course of the season, and it's a self-inflicted wound. It's being last in the league in penalties. At one point they were last in the league in drop passes, mental errors with the offensive line, missed throw, all those things. The time management issues. Where they get in the way of themselves, and that to me is a problem. And then you also look at it, and how well are they going to protect if they turn this into a passing game? Are they going to do things to not let Nick Bosa ruin the game, or are they going to just count on their offensive line? And I don't know. When you look at Dak's record, where he's thrown 40 or more times when it's that situation, it's not very good. I think it's like 3-13. Hopefully they'll be balanced. Hopefully they'll get out of their own way. But those are my biggest concerns, and it's been a concern all season.
So Derek Carr, I said earlier, I don't know what award I would give him. If I was the league, I'd make one up, the Life Preserver Award, because he's like this franchise feels like it's been like drowning for about, you know, 6-8 weeks, and he just keeps making these miraculous plays. And I've always liked Derek Carr way more than the average fan. I think way more than the media. I like him. I think there's something there. I would give him an extended contract. I'm a big believer in Derek. But I do worry about playing in a game of that magnitude with the Chargers. Your defense played almost 90 snaps. Now you got to go on the road and face a high-powered offense. And I feel like, all right, the gig is up a little, right? They can't keep doing this.
Well, what's been normal about their season? What has they lose their head coach in the way that they do? They have personal tragedy. They have four overtime wins. This is Derek Carr's first playoff game. There's nothing that's been normal about this season. So they're used to operating in this environment, and they built up a callus. And again, you look at their first game, and it's a one touchdown game going into the fourth quarter. I'm with you. I like Derek Carr a lot, and I like the Raiders story. And sometimes you got to be lucky, and sometimes the football gods shine on you, and hopefully for them, it'll continue the way it has.
Yeah. All right. So, what was your Super Bowl prediction? I think didn't you have Packers Bills before the year?
I did. I had Buffalo Packers with Buffalo winning. And look, I still like Buffalo a lot, and I like Green Bay a lot. But to me, the Titans, it's hard to not appreciate what the Titans have done all season long, and I think that they have a resilience and a toughness and a quality to them that's going to be hard to deal with. And with potentially Derrick Henry coming back, it's hard to bet against them right now. And look, I love their head coach. He's one of the smartest guys that I've ever coached in my career. And I think they've got as good an opportunity, if not better than anybody at this point.
All right, couple of coaching questions. Seven coaches out of work, all for kind of different reasons. Is there any of the coaching firings that just don't make any sense to you?
I'm never a big fan of firing people in their first year. I'm not a big fan of firing people in their second year. There's this idea of they want this turnaround right away, and I always say it's like asking you to cook a turkey, but they want you to cook it in the microwave, and it's just not realistic. And the, you know, you look at Brian Flores' situation. I know that you and I talked about whether they should move on with him when they're going through that down streak, but he sweeps the Patriots, and
they
have a winning season, and there's a lot of things that you like about him. And is the environment tough? Yeah, it's tough. That's what you signed up for when you sign them. And is there going to be turbulence? Yeah, but if you want to be able to win on a consistent level or compete for a championship on a consistent level, it's hard to do. And look, you also need a good quarterback. And we don't know where Tua is, but I thought that was rough.
Now, of all the current openings in the NFL, is there one that you would look at and say, I could turn that around pretty quick?
There's a few that you like. Miami, if you like Tua, they've got a ton of cap room. That should be a good situation. And that they're coming off a winning record. You look at Jacksonville, if you like Trevor, that should be a great situation because I think they've got the most cap room to do something and obviously the highest draft pick. Minnesota's got real offensive talent and should be able to win there quickly. But how do you feel about Cousins? The Giants, if you want drafts, they've got two picks in the high. Typically, you know, historically, they've been a patient organization, not in recent history. And then if you're Josh McDaniels, Houston's a perfect place. Brian Daboll, Houston's a perfect place. You're fundamentally aligned with the GM.
Yeah. All right. So you're sticking your neck out there with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're the only man in America willing to go on TV.
I like Ben Roethlisberger. I like the storyline. I think the game, you know, started horribly, but doesn't really matter what happened last time. It is a little bit. It doesn't fall in line with how competitive it could be this time.
Yeah, good seeing you, Coach. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too.
Yeah, the way this league treats coaches is just crazy. I remember when I got into this business. I can remember this. I was standing in the Desert Inn. It was a casino. It was a golf shop.
I love how your memory works, by the way.
The Desert Inn Golf Shop. And I was for about it was probably the 10th time in my life to that point I was going to try to fall in love with golf.
Right.
I've done it 100 times. I never do because I'm so bad at it. And I was at the Desert Inn, and I was a local sportscaster. And a guy said to me, boy, that – I think it was in a moment where I was ripping Tark and people were ripping me. And he goes, boy, that job, that broadcasting job, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. He goes, you're just – that. I hear that's – you got to move around the country and you get fired all the time. And I said – not really. I said most of the people, like at that point, I loved Al Michaels and Bob Costas. And I was like, you know, Vin Scully. I was like, none of those guys are getting fired. And in my career, I have controlled, regardless of anything you read, every entrance and every exit. NFL head coach is the worst. This is why Matt Rhule probably should have waited a year and then been the Oklahoma coach. Like, if I'm Lincoln Riley and I'm looking at this, I'm like, no, I'm going to stay at USC for a while. If I'm Nick Saban, it's like Jim Harbaugh, I'm like, I know college football isn't perfect. And I know the NILs, the Wild Wild West, and the transfer portal, they'll probably tweak those things, get them a little tiny bit more regulated. But the way owners, I mean, Brian Flores won 8 of 9 games in a good division with Tua. And because, quote, he was hard to get along with. Deal with it.
That excuse to me is embarrassing. Pitch me that it was something that happened with football, because the idea that you all can't seem to get along. If I'm an owner and you come to me and you're like, we just can't get along. I mean, I'm putting you two in a room. I'm like, come out getting along or everyone's fired. I don't have time for this. I'm a billionaire. I got to hear about how you don't get along.
Everybody's talking about David Culley being let go and they're disappointed. Totally get it. The Brian Flores one, ask yourself this, league history. I don't have it in front of me. A coach won 8 of 9 games to close the season and on his side of the ball has done a spectacular job. Well, if Vic Fangio, because Vic and Brian are very similar, great on the defensive side and did what was asked of them. Their side of the ball they mastered. If Vic Fangio had won 8 of 9 in that division and he was fired, you'd be like, why aren't people outraged by Brian Flores? If Vic Fangio got fired, you'd be like, would you say, well, he didn't get along with people? you would. We're giving Miami a pass on this. You
do not.
You do not win 8 of 9 games in a good division with what is viewed by almost every reasonable person is a low ceiling quarterback.
I just think that teams need to get to a place where they stop being so reactionary and have a little nuance and perspective on the decisions that they're making.
Listen, I'm going to tell you a true story, opposed to the ones that aren't true. But true story, I talked to a coach about the Jets ownership. And I've known a lot of Jets coaches. I've known Mangini. I've known Herm Edwards. I've known a lot of people in the Jets building through the years. And one time, the Johnson family, it was Chris Johnson, Woody Johnson, they came up on like a Friday, and one of those owners said, we need to pass the ball more on Friday. And the coach said, well, we're facing a team with the worst rush defense in the league. And one of the Johnsons, Woody or Chris, said, don't confuse me with stats. That's what a Jets owner said. Don't confuse me with stats. As the coach sat down and said, this is the worst rush defense in the league. We're pretty good at running the ball. We're going to control the clock. I want more passing on a Friday. Not Sunday, you duck your head in or you're flying back. Say, hey, I want to give this, whoever the quarterback was, Pennington, Favre. Not a Friday. I'm just going to stick my head in. I know the game plans are set because you pass more, and don't confuse me with data. Can you imagine if 1 minute before I went on the air, one of my bosses came down and said, I want you to lead with this. And I'm like, well, I haven't prepared for it. I don't want to ad-lib for 15 minutes with no notes. Don't confuse me with preparation. You'd be like, oh, he's a crazy person. That is what happens. I had another head coach in the NFL tell me this. Another true story. That he got a job with a let's just say a bottom 5 franchise in the league.
Okay.
He was in his first year, and they were playing the Baltimore Ravens, and this was the Ravens with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. Okay, that was the best defense in the last 10 years. He had a bad team he'd just taken over. It was later in the year. So the owner came in on Thursday or Friday. How do you think we're going to do? And the coach said, we're going to struggle to move the ball. They have like the best linebacker, the best safety, a great pass rush. And, we've got a really, I think it was like a rookie quarterback or a second year quarterback. The owner was furious. And the coach had to walk around the facility for 2 hours and talk the owner off the ledge. Those are just two stories that I know of. You were facing the Ravens. Brady struggled moving the ball at home against that Baltimore defense.
I mean, I said it earlier this week, just because you are great or a genius at one thing, that doesn't necessarily make it transferable into another.
That's just us. We're the only ones that can do that.
Yeah. I mean, but fans don't put the onus on the owners. They see the coach, so it's got to be the coach's fault. The coach picks the players according to them. The coach makes all the decisions. And the coach is the easiest one to move out. You can't just wipe your entire roster. You have contracts that you're owed. You can't just go pick new players from other great teams. And you can't change the ownership. Really, the GMs are probably the ones that should be on the hot seat more than the coaches. But that's not sexy.
Yeah.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday on Fox, Jalen Hurts and the Eagles look to dethrone the reigning champs as they take on the GOAT, Tom Brady and the Bucks. It all kicks off at 1 Eastern with pregame coverage starting at 11 a.m. only on Fox, all part of the Super Wild Card Weekend. Sunday, don't miss your chance to win $100,000 on the Fox Bet Super 6 app. Scan the QR code and enter your picks in the Wild Card Contest featuring Eagles Bucks for your chance to win. One question is, which team will win and by how many points? Colin, what do you think?
I think Tampa Bay wins close. I think the weather's a factor. It limits it. The only thing I worry about if I'm Philadelphia, Brady has been great in the red zone this year. A lot of touchdowns, very few field goals. So Philadelphia is going to have to play, and they've got one great corner. Philadelphia is going to have to play really good situational defense in the red zone. I think they will, and so I think it's going to be a close game. Now, it should be noted, and if you go back to these playoff games with Tom, take out last year's Super Bowl, that Washington game was close. That Green Bay game was close. So Tommy's been in some close playoff games since he arrived in Tampa, and many of his New England playoff games were close. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Remember when we were like, yeah, that's only going to be probably maybe three head coaching positions open.
Oh, that was a month ago. We were Gruden, Urban, and Matt Nagy.
Yeah, maybe.
Now we're at seven, and the Matt Rhule thing still doesn't feel complete.
No.
Matt Rhule got let go by the end of the weekend. I would not be shocked. We'd be at eight, which is the league average every year.
Well, the Texans fired David Culley yesterday after one season. Mm-hmm. GM Nick Caserio released a statement following the release. He said, "I came to this difficult but necessary decision after reviewing our football operation. While a change after one season is unusual, we had philosophical differences over the long-term direction and vision of our program. We appreciate Coach Culley for helping us navigate through a difficult season, but it is my responsibility to make decisions that I feel are best for our organization." Culley did match last season's win total of four games. They beat the Chargers, Titans, and Jacksonville twice.
Yeah, they got, if I recall, I don't have it in front of me, I think they got crushed by Tennessee twice, which is...
No, they beat the Titans once.
Oh, they did?
Yes. They beat the Chargers, Titans, and Jacksonville twice.
Okay. Yeah, I would have given him a second year. It's funny. He said, "We have philosophical differences." I don't even know what his philosophies are. Like, Brian Flores, I could see that he can beat Brian's Purdy. You can see at the podium. Not a lot of nonsense with Brian. David's, like, known as a really likable. Everybody in the league likes David Culley.
Neither one of us loved this hire for the Texans, but no. It also felt like, to your point, he's a well-liked guy. He's going to come in and bring at least some stability to what is a completely dysfunctional organization.
By the way, I still don't think. So this is why I would have, Joy, given David Culley a second year. I still think of all the openings, it's the weakest. I have the weakest owner.
Absolutely.
It's the weakest roster. Yeah, so it's still not. Why not give David Culley one more year next year's draft, by the way? Because reportedly Houston's not going to take a quarterback. They're just going to, because they don't think the quarterback draft is good enough. And Davis Mills, just give him another year.
Yeah.
So if you're going to give Davis Mills a second year, why not give the coach a second year with him?
I don't understand the move. To me, it looks like Houston is just looking for an upgrade at the coaching position, because there are a lot of good candidates this hiring cycle. A lot of good coordinators up. There are a lot of former head coaches that are deserving of a second chance that are available right now. But again, if I'm a top candidate, why am I even considering Houston? I'm not considering Houston. Oh, I understand there's a limited amount of these jobs, but as we know, because we say every single year, there will be openings next year.
Well, give me every job opening, and there's at least, okay, Giants and Texans. Can we admit this? Those are the two worst job openings.
Yes.
Miami, I get a really good
Miami's
defense.
Miami's right there with it, though. If you don't turn it around in the next 2 to 3 years, you're fired.
So bad.
Miami is right there with it. It's not a good job. Such bad owners. It's not a good job. Well, the issue with the coaching hirings and firings, which we just mentioned, is that there is a reaction to the fan base and the media that is probably too extreme. Like, what we say, we give our opinion every day. Fans are going to be fanatics and passionate. That's what they're supposed to do. You as ownership and management are supposed to listen to that. You know, take it into consideration where you are, what your brand is, what people are saying about you, and then also evaluate what you're doing in-house. And the problem is, I think with a lot of organizations and companies for that matter, they refuse to just hold up a mirror. It's always everybody else's fault. It's always this person, well, we could fire this person and bring in this person, and we got to go for the big fish. Like, why does the big fish want you? If year after year after year, you're filing through people, not to mention, when you fire a head coach, you're not just firing them. You're firing their entire staff. So you have literally hired and fired hundreds of people if you're some of these organizations.
That's what I always say.
How is that not embarrassing for you?
I always say part of having a great team, part of Belichick's success has been he's had really good assistants. Anytime you're thinking about, like whenever I hear Brown fans get fidgety with Kevin Stefanski, I'm like, do all you fans in Cleveland get that other coaches respect Stefanski? If you fire him, like after next year, you were lucky to get Stefanski. You get to a point where people in life, here's a rule. It doesn't matter if you're an actor, a football coach, or a broadcaster. Talented people have options. The more coaches you fire, the talented people cross you off a list.
And not only do talented people have options, they're also wanted. So if you're a top coordinator,
why would you want to go
Why would you? Yes, you want to be a head coach. You want the opportunity. Of course, all of us have massive aspirations. But we're not just good people. Don't just jump to the next opportunity because it's available.
If Eric Bieniemy could stay in Kansas City for one more year or go to the Houston Texans, I don't know if I'd take the job.
Absolutely, I stay in Kansas City.
I'm the same thing. I'm not sure I'd take the job. I think Eric Bieniemy has enough confidence in himself. He'd be like, I'm going to run it back with Mahomes.
And Kansas City wants him. Kansas City doesn't want to lose him.
That's right.
You have a responsibility as an organization to make yourself a desirable location as well. Yeah. Just because there's a limited amount of these jobs does not mean it's a good job. Just because it's a lot of money doesn't mean it's a good job. And again, it's not just the head coach. The head coach has to bring in coordinators and a whole lot of staff. All of those people that aren't getting paid to sit at home have lost their job as well. It's a lot of turnover.
Yeah.
Culley's the 13th coach fired in the NFL after one season since 2006.
It's just ridiculous.
No, listen, he's going to be paid. He's going to be compensated for his time off.
I will say he did say, I really appreciate the offer.
He got a great deal.
It's a great deal.
They owe him $17 million over the next 3 years. So he's walking away with close to $22
million. For not working.
Yes. but his contract aside and whatever's fair to him or not, the landscape of these coaching jobs in the NFL is outrageous.
It's a mess.
Like, there's no way you can build any kind of consistency with that type of hiring process. So Tom Brady will be facing off against the Eagles for the first time in the postseason since losing to them in the Super Bowl, 41-33. Many Eagles fans, who are very petty, by the way, you Eagles fans.
Yeah.
I don't mind it, but you are very petty. They're hung up on the fact that Brady didn't shake Nick Foles' hands, remember?
I remember that.
You and
I didn't like that either.
I didn't love it.
Didn't love it.
Well, Brady addressed Shakegate when he was asked about it this week.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
I've
shaken Nick's hand plenty of times, though. So I have a lot of respect for Nick. And, you know, I try to be a good sport as best I can. I know it doesn't always look like that because sometimes I get a little pissed out there, but for the most part, I try to be a good sport.
The reporter asked him, are you aware of Eagles fans' fixations with you not shaking Foles' hands? I didn't like it. After the Super Bowl, you need to go do it. Like, you got to go shake hands. Like, that's a respectful thing to do. He also didn't shake Nick Foles' hands after the Bears beat the Bucks 2019 last season, which is what spiraled people into thinking, like, maybe he just doesn't like Nick Foles. Like, why is he not shaking Nick Foles' hand? But apparently he has shaken his hand a bunch. That was also the game where he infamously forgot it was the fourth down before game. But he can make it up and shake Jalen Hurts' hand this weekend. Make it all good, I guess.
That would be good, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a huge, like, this is a big deal in sports. Like, you don't shake hands, remember, with the Pistons. Like, it can be a lasting impression if you don't go over and be a good sport.
In soccer and hockey, there is a kind of institutional protocol that you do it. Like, it's just understood. Basketball and football.
Kind of for any kind of combat sport as well.
Combat sport, yeah. Olympic sports. Mm-hmm. But I will say basketball and football, sometimes guys just walk off the floor. Even guys I like.
I agree. It doesn't make me outraged, but I do think after a Super Bowl, you owe the opponent the respect of a nod. Like, you do. I think you do after the big game.
Yes.
After every single game, every week, it's not a big deal. But after that game, you do. So Super Bowl 56 is just 1 month away, and both NFL officials and local organizers say it is not leaving the Los Angeles area. There was a story that they had Dallas as a backup location for the Super Bowl, but the NFL has no plans to move the Super Bowl to Arlington, Texas, or anywhere else, despite the rise in COVID cases. Several officials confirmed this Thursday at SoFi during a media event. The NFL confirmed it finds backup sites for Super Bowl every year, and that has no serious concerns about the ability to hold the game in Inglewood. Rams CEO Kevin Demoff noted that SoFi has extensive coronavirus safety protocols in place for all the games played at the stadium, which will continue through the playoffs. It is February 13th for Super Bowl 56. This is not surprising news to me. It is a massive deal to have a Super Bowl in your city. There's millions of dollars that come into the city because of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it would be a lifelong career mistake for any of these politicians to make a drastic move like that at this point.
Yes.
When it's a month away. But
especially when you hear this variant and
yeah, I mean, everyone's ability to be flexible with this particular variant is personally a little bit maddening, but
we live in a city with a lot of people that are vaccinated and boosted. You don't move the Super Bowl.
No. And the protocols, it's the protocols are what it is. Like, yeah. It's fine.
By the way, the NBA, I'll give it a little credit. If you're vaxxed and boosted, the NBA just stopped testing players who are vaxxed and boosted, like, as they should. You're asking players to get in the NBA, get vaxxed and get boosted, and they do. Well, then they shouldn't have to test every day. It's not fair. Why get vaxxed and boosted if you're going to do these protocols? If you want to be unvaxxed, I'm going to have some protocols that are tougher. But if you comply, which 99% of the players have,
right. Shouldn't
have to test them every day. This league now, the NBA's got guys on 10-day contracts all over the league. It's
a
mess. Well,
it got out of control. And the NFL did adjust as well. It's just, you know, this has become so tribal. It's incapable for people to move off of their positions on anything, even though the situation has changed.
All right, Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get fit and lean with M-Drive Boost and Burn, supplement for driven men, free shipping. MDriveForMen.com. Check it out. Love Dwayne Wade. Had him on the show a month ago. He was fantastic. Had a new book out. It's a beautiful book. He said something yesterday. He was talking about all-time greats. And Dwayne Wade said, quote, "The game continues to keep moving forward. We're going to continue to see things we've never seen before." That I agree with. "The eyes are going to get younger and younger. We're not going to be the ones having a conversation about the GOATs. Now it's going to be the younger, younger generation. And they're going to forget about Jordan like we forgot about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar." I totally disagree. I think Jordan is totally unique. First of all, Kareem, I grew up with Kareem. I never felt connected to Kareem. I kind of watched him from afar. He had a unique shot that nobody duplicated. He was academic and stoic. I didn't buy his shoes or his apparel. He is the most underrated player of all time. I know that sounds weird, but most people that are fans didn't watch him. You couldn't stop him. He was great defensively. He was great offensively. He's one of the smartest players in league history. But he was stoic. If Michael Jordan and Kareem were actors, MJ's Denzel. Kind of feel like that'd be fun to go out and have a drink with him. And Kareem would be Jeremy Irons. Regal. Academic. You would never bother him if you saw him in a hotel lobby. That's Kareem. Magic, in fact, did an amazing job. And this is a credit to Magic's personality. Magic made Kareem a little bit more likable. And Magic would go give him big hugs, and the big fella Kareem would be like, "What is this? This is odd." Even Magic's warmth with Kareem kind of felt like an odd fit. And I love Kareem. When I was a kid, in my backyard, Kareem was who I copied. I did a hook as a little boy. That was Kareem. He was nothing like him. But we wore Michael's shoes. Other athletes wear Michael's gear. When John Madden died, that was what was so unique. How the richest broadcaster of his time connected with a plumber in Iowa, a school teacher in Denver, regular American citizens. Michael maybe didn't connect quite like that, but he was glamorous. He was cool. We wore his gear. He was never stoic. He was really emotional. He punched the teammate. He'd yell at Rodman. He was incredibly visceral. Kareem rarely did, although he did once punch Kent Benson. I remember that. You can look it up on YouTube. But I think Jordan lasts forever. When you wear him, when you can feel him, when his moments. I mean, right now, if you closed your eyes and I said, think about Michael's five best moves, you'd go to the two-hand, you'd go to the Cleveland. If I said, Kareem, five biggest hook shots, well, they all kind of feel the same, right? Could be in Seattle, could be in Los Angeles, could have been, you know, in Dallas. And this is not a shot at Kareem. But as great as Brady is, Manning's more relatable. Peyton Manning eats Oreos. Tom's married to a supermodel and eats avocado ice cream. Peyton Manning, and I don't know him well, and you all think I'm a Brady fan, But if I saw Brady in a bar, I wouldn't walk up to him. I would Peyton. Just feels like he'd be, sit down, have a beer. It's not a knock at Brady. It's just Kareem feels academic and distant, and Tom feels bigger than anybody I know. My friends have attractive wives, no supermodels. But it's just different. And I think Michael's connectability and Peyton Manning's connectability and Brett Favre's connectability, the best players are often forgotten. Oscar Robertson, we never talk about. Karl Malone's the second leading scorer. We don't talk John Stockton or Karl Malone. Jordan's different. Peyton Manning's different. Brett Favre is different. They had different brands, but Hanes underwear, hot dogs, Oreos, Wrangler. That's connectability. Hour 3 next.